I bit my jaw the other day.
Just calling out.
2 weeks ago? At Tzatziki's.
This man's telling the story again.
Went back to Tzatziki's. Sat one table over, same dish. Bit my same spot on my jaw. Oh. The same dish. Like, and drew blood both times.
No.
You need to quit. Because
you tasted
Tzatziki's.
The iron?
Oh, I'd always take a napkin in it and push it way back there and look. And I'm like, yep.
M&M's always make me bite my cheek.
So Julie was like, I don't know why I did that. She goes, because you're an animal. There's just action. It's like, okay. Then I got embarrassed and self-conscious to be like, I bet you people are watching me from across the restaurant.
Were you alone? Like,
no.
Oh, okay.
I was with someone.
No one does that.
Yes, they do.
No one. Tzatziki's doesn't have a bar.
So you can't sit at
and eat alone.
That's good.
Only serial killers do that. I'm going to keep an eye on this guy.
We have a studio audience.
Are you ready? Let's do this.
Okay.
And I'll have to do the thing. What was the...
What?
When that... That was the old...
Here's Johnny.
Here's us.
Welcome to Products of Grace, the podcast by Mercy Hill Church. My name is Lawson Harlow, and with me today I have Don Terrell and Blake McCullough. So, Don, what are we doing today?
Like, what are you from?
I'm just being silly.
That was like the worst monotone.
I was making that like old, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. I forgot what it is.
You tried.
Like the old style radio?
Yeah. Kind of, yeah.
Are you with me?
Yeah.
You missed on it.
I know what you're trying to do.
So today. We are going to discuss, the title of today's episode is That Big Body Life. That Big Body Life.
Let's do it.
You ready?
Ready.
All right. Before we begin. Sam's Club. Belt
Sam's
shopping.
Club.
You ready? This is the run. Sam's Club. Belt shopping. 90-foot Jesus. Bow in the toe. And nicknames.
What?
Good gosh.
These are all topics that we have to cover. Blake, you have a Sam's membership, right?
I do. I love that place.
So Blake and I discovered a new level of the depth of our friendship.
It's true.
This week.
Plumbing them.
Because I talked to, actually FaceTimed Blake while he was at Sam's. We had a chaperone. Lawson was on the phone, too.
Lawson's like looking confused. He's like,
you're the worst, Lawson.
I'm trying to figure out.
Wait. Why
were y'all talking without me?
He was. That was his look.
Like he was like,
wait, y'all went shopping? Were y'all lost across the store?
It's like, you were there, bro.
The whole time, you were there. He doesn't even remember.
He was probably playing video games. He wasn't looking at the camera.
No, I was sick. Remember, that was Monday, and I was like,
you can't play video games while you're sick?
I was.
Anyways.
You were on your porch.
The worst thing about Sam's Club, and I saw this tweet. There's somebody tweeted out on social media that Sam's was not the worst, but the people at Sam's were terrible because they're part of the world, and somebody at Sam's had stolen a wallet out of this individual's purse. And the whole time, like, Sam's has an app.
They do. It's a beautiful thing.
And you can scan the barcode, and you get to walk out.
Literally just walk out.
You just walk out. You get a QR code, right?
QR code, they scan it at the door.
They scan a couple of things.
You already have to go to the door anyway.
You already have to stand there in that line.
Yeah.
So my question is, why weren't you belt shopping there?
Do they have belts?
They do.
Do they?
You don't think they have a Member's Mark belt?
I don't think so.
You don't think so?
I know you were offended by my belt.
So explain to me. So for y'all that don't know, Blake shared his belt shopping, and I got caught. And it was the guy that's on a famous meme.
Yeah. He's the dead inside man.
Huh?
He's the dead inside man.
And I know now why. It's because he just poses for off-brand commercials.
So most people are like, wow, look at that discovery, because you notice the guy that's from that famous meme.
And you're offended that I bought a belt from Amazon?
No, it was the type of belt you were shopping for.
Okay, listen, Don.
Woven elastic?
Listen, Don.
This man's shopping for woven elastic.
I shopped by color. So here's what happened. I bought some new shoes. And it was at one of those stores where you buy one pair and you get half off on the second pair. And so I got some work shoes as my second pair, but they're gray dress shoes. Mm-hmm. Well, they're like a hybrid dress shoe. They're Cole Haan, so they're like kind of, they're like dress shoe, tennis shoe hybrid. Anyway, for work. But they're light gray. And I couldn't find a light gray belt anywhere or in any material.
But you went out to Amazon. Did you purchase one?
Yeah.
Can I ask a question?
Was it the braided elastic?
Yeah, bro. I love that.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Do y'all own multiple belts?
Lawson.
Yes. I have a hanger with like six belts on it.
Yeah,
this man, you're talking to the man that did a wedding. He did a wedding.
I know.
And did not have a belt on.
I know. It wasn't intentional.
It was one of the most shameful.
If you ever want to borrow some, I have some suspenders.
I would have called off a wedding.
Yeah, I mean,
I was like, until everyone is dressed appropriately.
Like, is he even ordained? Like, can he do a wedding if he doesn't know how to put a belt on?
I actually only have one belt.
Did you button
both
buttons on your jacket?
No.
Okay, good.
It's a 3-button.
How many buttons did you button?
You button just the top one.
No, brother. A 3-button? You
Maybe
only do
I have
the middle.
A 2-button. I don't know.
Golly. Yeah, I have like 10 belts.
I only have one belt.
I want to see the woven elastic belt.
I'm going to be wearing it this Sunday, but I won't be here.
Where will you be?
I'm preaching at Cedar View.
Oh, that's right.
So, no more Hawaiian shirts for this week.
So, did y'all see your nicknames I gave you?
Yes.
What?
Someone keeps deleting their Twitter app or something because I keep waffling between 400 and 399.
I saw that.
It's like all the time.
So
every
you
other
hit 757.
What nickname?
On Twitter.
Yeah, your nicknames are officially 757. Lawson, you're 757 and Blake is 400.
Why am I 757? Why is that my nickname?
Because that's exactly how many followers you had when I looked at it.
Uh-huh.
And it rolls off the tongue.
757?
Doesn't it?
Sound like a plane. Isn't that a plane?
Mister, I want to say his like 400.
400.
Yes. That's how I want to say it.
I felt like I deserved a better nickname than that, but it's okay.
I mean, it could change.
Well, I mean, we've gone from
758 doesn't feel right.
Yeah, we've gone from orange.
It makes me think of like Heinz 57 because the sauce is orange.
Yeah, oh, it's red.
Yeah, it's orange.
It's orange. It's so
like a burnt orange.
It is. So if you're 757.
I'm Orange Fury 757.
Yes, 757 sauce.
Charles, I'm glad you're here.
Hey, Lawson, Charles. Orange Fury 757 Heinz, baby.
/ Pithy. So I was listening to another podcast today or yesterday, and
gave the run. You remember what I said? I said we got braided belt, 90 Sam's foot club. Jesus,
whatever. Orange Fury satiated. Let's just go.
Heinz 57. We've jumped all over the place. I mean, I didn't even hit it all. I don't even know if we get
what's the 90 foot Jesus.
Oh, that's Darren.
Oh no,
going to Ohio, and he sent a picture of the 90-foot Jesus, and it was like something he saw in Columbus, Ohio, or somewhere. And I said, the only thing it could be worse, you could be taking a picture of the Ark in Kentucky.
And then he went.
He was literally on the way.
And I had no clue. You could tell, like, Lawson was gasping through text. He's like,
I was laughing.
Oh, you
I
were?
Was laughing.
He
oh,
was
my
like,
goodness.
Troll. Oh, 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 LLL. I was like, what? He's really going?
He's really
like,
going, yeah.
I thought that was so funny.
Then he said, checkmate. That was my favorite part of that text chain. He sits there and he takes a picture of the Ark and he says, checkmate, it's real.
Then the whole thing turned into a troll.
That's awesome.
Of him taking pictures inside the Ark of dinosaurs and saying it's fact.
And then there's like one
fact.
Of them that said
there
probably.
There's the evidence.
I want to go so bad.
It's cool.
What?
I want to go. I love
That's
that, bro.
I went like 5 years ago.
What?
You couldn't pay me.
He's crazy, bro. He's dogmatic about something that's not real. It's okay.
I don't know. What's the appeal?
Okay, if there's not appeal just in seeing the
to scale.
Yeah.
It's massive. It's like cool to see.
Yeah.
The
but
scale
to drive all the way there? I want to see
scale.
I mean,
people drive to Disney World.
I want to see the scale of the ocean.
I was at seminary and I drove like an extra hour and I thought it was good. Like I thought it was worth it.
If we didn't have
I'd ride with you.
There's if you and I right now museum. Didn't have the Sam's
I know,
app checkout. I don't
Praise the Lord.
We might be back. That might be a net neutral.
Though I did hear y'all. This is where I'm weirded out. I don't know if this was a Babylon Bee or if this is real, but I think I heard that they're trying to build the Tower of Babel.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah, that's a bad idea. Like top to bottom, that's just one of those that's like, let's not do that, shall we?
Yeah. That was weird. I agree with that.
That was weird. It's like, hey, y'all remember Genesis 11?
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, let's leave that be. Let's put that one down.
People in Kentucky speaking some new language.
No, that happened at Pentecost.
It's like the opposite.
That happened at Pentecost.
All right, Bo in the tow.
Bo
came over because he needed a place to crash. For like an hour.
Like, what are we doing?
For an hour.
Yeah. This is like, do we need to have a different, we need to take this off the air?
Reagan was having a Bible study.
Okay.
With Amen. Some girls. So Amen. He needed to come to a place, our safe space. So he was there. So he walks in. Julie's watching TV. Feet are stretched out on the couch. And he goes to pinch a toe. Like, you know, just like big brother, I'm going to get your toe. You know, it was all big kid stuff. You know?
It's weird. Yeah.
And immediately Julie pulls her feet up, screeches and yells, "Don." And I'm already standing like right there. And Bo is look like he had seen a ghost. And she goes, "My toe is broken. Don't come anywhere near my feet." And he's just standing there frozen. And I'm like trying not to die laughing. I go, Wait, why'd you scream my name? This man's like 6'4", 280. What am I going to do? Literally, that was her reaction. Don! I'm arm's length from him. Like, I'm still so confused that that's their reaction.
Yeah.
Anyways, that was Bo was like walked away, sat down real sheepishly. It was good. All right, so the story about the crows.
The what?
The story about the crows. This is good. What? No,
we started. We started.
We're in it. Yeah. All right, so
yeah.
Leave this in.
All right, so
I don't know.
Julie texts me and says, "You won't believe what just happened." So I have a bird bath in front of the house in the flower bed.
Or a baptistry if you're a Presbyterian.
It's very thoughtful of you.
So she said, "A crow just flew in there and dropped a piece of pizza in the water."
I'm serious.
What is your life?
I know it.
So then I'm like, no, I go, "Are you kidding me?" She's like, "No." So I come out of my, well, I was actually at the house for that one. So I come out of my office, I'm looking out the guest bedroom window, and I'm like, there is a piece of pizza with like black olives and topping. It's well put together. So I go back and I sit back down at the desk, and she texts me 20 minutes later. She goes, "You won't believe it." I'm like, "What?"
No.
She goes, "It dropped another piece of pizza in there." Yes. So that night, I went out there. I got the bird bath.
Tipped it over.
Dumped it, hosed it out, put it back, filled it back up with water. I'm at work.
Next day?
Yes. She texts me. She said, "You won't believe what happened." I said, "What?" She said, "The crow just put another piece of pizza in the water."
I mean,
for 2 days straight.
For 2 days.
It's getting pizza.
Do you have a doorbell camera?
No. So the next day, I go out there to clean the basin out because it's cloudy. It had already eaten the pizza out. But then there's like parts of other little birds that are picked clean.
Oh.
Like on the edge. Like these crows evidently are like, I don't know what they're doing in the bird bath. They have a nest up in the tree, and evidently what we...
They're baiting them with
they're
pizza.
They're not bathing, and they're that's
they
for
have
sure.
babies in the nest, and evidently what they were doing is they are soaking their...
To soften it?
...food and
crows
carrying
are actually
it up
very
there.
Intelligent birds. Yeah. That's real.
But you know, it made me think. This is how this ties in. Elijah on the mountain.
The crows bring him food.
Yes, bro. I always thought that.
You
that and
that,
that
pizza,
is like
bro.
Supernatural miracle stuff. You know what I'm saying? But it's like, evidently that was using...
Yeah.
Something I never thought about.
He
like
equipped the birds with the ability.
Yeah, prior to sure. a lot, it wasn't like they didn't have the ability already to carry food.
Yeah, because clearly they can carry pizza multiple times.
Three pieces.
I think you should have ate that. That was provision.
In the water, in the body, in the bird.
It's like soup.
It's like soup pieces. So I'm sick.
So are we ready?
So Don died.
Yeah. Dysentery.
Yeah, he
Oregon
did.
Trail.
All right, we ready?
Yeah. You can just cut everything before this part.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
No. So with that, gentlemen.
With that.
Let's see if all of the feathers of this bird flock together. And if it's all a bed of roses. Birds of a feather flock together. You want to know the background on it?
No.
Yeah.
I do.
When you hear the saying in conversation, the speaker is referring to the fact that people who share a common ground will usually be more drawn to one another. For example, people who have a hobby that they share or who come from a similar cultural background would be more likely to interact with one another. The origin of this idiom, the beginnings of this term go back hundreds of years and can be dated back to the 1500s when the saying was first written by a man named William Turner in a piece called The Rescuing of Ramish. The Rescuing of the Ramish Fox, where he wrote, "The words birds of a nide and color flock and fly always together," which has evolved into the phrase we know today.
Mm.
You want to know bed of roses?
No.
All right, good. A bed of roses means an easy and comfortable situation in which a person likes to live. In modern language, it is a metaphor for one's comfort zone. The phrase a bed of roses is an idiom. It is often considered a synonym of enjoyment, agreeable, pleasant, or comfortable, despite having positivity in the meanings. The phrase is often used as life is not a bed of roses, which is a reminder not to get used to comfort. According to the Brewer's Dictionary of Phrase and Fable, this phrase originated from a French literature, Le Roman de la Rose, in the 13th century. It means a bed of roses. The lover in the poem dreams of touring a garden where he finds a bed of roses near a fountain. Later, it was used by Christopher Marlowe in the poem The Passionate Shepherd to His Love, published in 1599 after his death. I thought that was interesting. So, we had a church-wide picnic, which Lawson couldn't go.
True. That was very sad.
And last week, we couldn't record a podcast because Lawson went to the lake. So, Lawson.
This is the So Lawson section. We've waited this long.
You thought you escaped.
Yeah. I really did.
Was it worth it? Was the lake trip worth it?
It's a good question.
This is a lose-lose situation for me.
Was it worth it?
This is a lose-lose.
But you did contract. You know, this is the game we play now.
A disease.
Is if I get sick.
Contract a disease,
if I get sick, if anyone gets sick,
yeah,
you've got to go back to ground zero.
I've always done that, though.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah, but it's commonplace. Yeah, it's like, oh, you got sick.
It's not cool anymore.
Where'd you get it from? Yeah.
Who'd you get it? Where'd you get it?
And you got like a yarn and pictures in your bedroom.
Yeah.
Trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
So you believe you got sick at that trip?
I'm fairly certain.
Which happened on the day that we normally record. We couldn't get a recording times put together.
I mean, I was available at any other moment.
Yeah, but we don't all work for the church.
I mean, technically, you get a paycheck.
Shots fired.
Full tough. Shmear her.
Anyways, it's a lose-lose. You're not going to answer it.
No, because there is no win.
But you missed the church-wide picnic
as well. I'm very sad.
Because you came, and for people that don't know, you came and you preached sick.
Yes.
With fever.
Just sprayed all over us.
You said your fever broke while you were up here.
Yeah, you know that fever sweat, you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So like, I know.
You just sweated out your
sickness. So normally, you know, like normally when you start sweating, there's like, well, sorry, I'm trying not to be graphic.
Like an Axe commercial, like you just water.
Yeah, like you start at a certain place. When your fever sweat, it's like it starts on the forehead, like way up here around the hairline. That's when mine started and I was like, this isn't good. So I had chills and fever sweats the whole time.
They were multiplying.
They were indeed.
That's a good one.
Right. I literally remember like a total of 6 minutes of that sermon.
That's all. It was only 6 minutes long.
Oh, okay. That helps.
All right. So we're going to have a brief elders meeting. As a result of that lunch, the fish fry in the park, the first annual Mercy Hill fish fry in the park.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, which means it could happen.
Should happen again.
Are we going to call it fish fry in the park or picnic in the park?
I think picnic in the park. I like the better.
I like the alliteration.
Because I think we can change the entree.
I don't know, bro.
I mean, it was good.
Drew brought, oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Drew brought some of that fish. That fish was so good. After you,
alligator?
After your Lord's table, homily.
Mm-hmm. That's good. We should call him a homily.
Yeah. Lamb would have been fitting.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, Patty created a Facebook page.
I've seen it.
Called
Folks.
Folks of Mercy Hill.
Say folks, guys. Come
folks.
On.
Folks.
This is freaking Mississippi.
Folks. So, she added names under the pictures.
One of my favorite
ones. Like I was in like the, I don't know, the who's who of the commercial appeal or something.
Oh, yeah. Like People on the Move?
Yeah.
All right.
Memphis Business Journal or something.
So she is inquiring. This is a real live inquiry. Here's what she's inquiring. Patty wants me, this is not me, this is who's relaying this message, Julie, wants me to see if it would be okay to build a photo album to keep at church and add to as new people come. She wanted to do a photo bulletin, but I think we would have better success if we did an album and kept it on the coffee bar for people to look through. She was going to print photos of people she already has and write their names under them.
Cool.
Are you down with that?
Why not?
I'm down with that.
Yeah.
Party.
Should we put it on a pegboard?
No, stop.
Where? Where? It reminds me of like Noelle's room because you go in her room and there's like, what is that? Is that a collage? It's a whole wall of collage.
Oh, yeah. I love the idea of an album. I think it's fun.
All right. So that's approved?
Yeah.
All right.
Done. So
at the at the picnic.
Yeah. I'm so sad.
Why?
I'm sad I wasn't there.
I had to leave early and I'm sad too.
Mm. So it was discussed, and this is the where this topic came from. I was discussing with someone else how abnormal the last two sermons are.
That's good.
Given the broader church culture and especially how we were raised. Body life. That big body life.
Got it.
You know, like me growing up, the real big thing was, and me and this other guy, let's call him Rick. So me and this other guy. It was like, you know, what came? So let's just,
me and Rick.
Go you know, with we, me. We were saying to each other, you know, the common vernacular was to say to one another, I'll see you again on Sunday.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's like, that's the only place that you saw those people.
It's good.
Your folks.
Like those people.
Folks, yeah. Man. Folks.
Why is that? Lawson, why is that? Why is that the culture? It's even common now today.
I think you won't. So I had a lovely meeting with
a guy. Let's call him.
Well, it was anyway. I had a meeting recently with someone who's been coming to our church for the past couple of months, and I think honestly, she asked a similar question. And in the conversation, I think that we have done everything in our power to put on a facade, and facades only work if we are at arm's length. Mm-hmm. And so, I think because we don't have a full orbed view of the Christian life, it demands that we have isolated interaction with the church.
I think because of a lack of persecution, church just became one of the other social engagements that you're part of. And so it's just like Sunday's church day, maybe Wednesday. And then you just have baseball on Monday and Lions Club on Thursday or whatever.
And I would say into that very same thing, unregenerate membership.
Yeah, for sure.
So I would say cult of personality, where the church is the identity of the pastor and not the people.
Yeah,
and so as long as you showed up and heard him, then you went to church.
Yep.
It wasn't about relationship. And I also think that the world has come alongside our lives and provided alternative community.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because it's like we as Christians go into the world, right? He didn't call us out of the world. But there we find celebrations of work birthdays, work children. You know what I'm saying? Like all the stuff. And then it's like we struggle to have that type of continuity at church because it's by and large, I don't know. I just think the experience for me growing up was like, it's a spectator. You're not involved.
Well, your community becomes, so like, for instance, someone was telling me about they moved to a certain place. This was a family member, but they moved to a certain place and their whole thing was, I can't build relationships. And my very first question to them was, what church are you going to?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's the way we think about relationships anymore. And so this person is a professing Christian. I've got questions about that, full disclosure. But nonetheless, it's like if you say that you follow Christ and your desire is to build relationships, your immediate reaction, actually, I think you should almost feel, you know,
magnetically pulled to the church to start building relationships, to start building relationships with. And we, instead, we build relationships in the things that we must do, right? So like normative relationships that are built inside of the schools, they're built inside of unique hobbies that you have, you know, and that's just, that is going to encourage a shallowness. And it's, I think it's going to actually encourage a stagnation of your walk with the Lord on top of that, because you're not fellowshipping with people who are going to spur you on to love and to good works.
Mm-hmm. So I mentioned, so let's give the people that listen, that don't attend church here and don't regularly listen to our sermons. What, I mean, so I said the last two sermons were abnormal. Why would we say that about those last two sermons? What makes them abnormal?
Y'all can speak to that.
I actually thought you were going somewhere else when you said they're abnormal. I think
same. We're talking about length.
Well, I was talking about just like heavily application.
Yeah, true. I mean, that's fair too. I mean, we've come out of high doctrine,
right? And
in
I think
Romans
that,
into application.
But like, it's high time to do that. You know what I mean? Like we've gotten the doctrine and now we're applying it.
Yeah.
I would say there's a lot. I loved the departure from programmatization. In the last two sermons. Not that we had been on programmatization, but like you hear sermons on Romans 12 and it's like, take this test, fill out this survey, find your niche and like do your thing. And I really loved that you went, I think, the correct direction, a completely opposite direction of that, which is like, serve the church, you'll figure out where your gifts are by doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and also love the fact that it's like, instead of you trying to determine or us to investigate what all specific giftings I may have, my whole body, is to be given over to, you know what I'm saying? Like, that it is used, like it's used, like the whole person, like the person is used. And I thought, like, you know, your value is the person, not the gifts, you know?
Yeah, I was thinking about that in regard to choir. That's a weird thing to throw out, but... You know, on Sunday morning, one of the benefits of sitting at the front is I hear every individual in the congregation sing. And if you're like me, you don't have a particularly, you know, lovely voice. It's just reality. And so like, yet there is a massive beauty in your contribution in singing, right? Mm-hmm. And so like, if you're
that's crazy that you're articulating this. I literally had this exact same thought.
Well, that's the whole thing, right? It's like,
I mean, like, how beautiful would be your voice by itself?
Oh, yeah, mine's trash. Nobody wants to listen to that.
But knit together as the congregation, all of the voices provide the music.
How ugly is it when someone really wants to shine in that moment instead of just being part of the group?
Right.
Because their whole purpose is to stand out as opposed to be a part of something bigger. And when we understand that being a part of the body of Christ is being a member, that means that there are going to be times like that I'm going to exercise my voice in singing that no one would want to hear in isolation, but everybody wants to hear in cooperation with the rest of the body, right? Like I'm glad to have Drew mic'd and I'm glad I'm not mic'd. But nonetheless, like
say less,
as they say, but
less.
But the I'll never be the first time that man texts me that. I was like, you're drunk. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, they shortened it to just less.
Yeah, I know. I'm like, I don't know how to function with this conversation. But in our contributions, if we say, only the people who can sing well here, right? It's like all of a sudden half the congregation's quiet or more or less.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is miserable.
All right, so I have a question.
Okay.
Should your friendships and relationships materially change if a member or even you leaves the church?
Yes.
Why? Why is that? I'm in total agreement, but I'm saying
I mean, I'll be glad. Go ahead, Blake. Yeah.
I think just practically, it's just part of who you see and who you're with.
Yeah.
Like your friendships are going to be twice as hard or more to hold up a friendship when you don't see them regularly.
You know, I'm playing. You see the angle I'm coming from, like, because I'm saying, you really have to ask yourself, would they change if you left? And normally, growing up, in my experience,
they didn't
because they're not founded upon the body.
And I think now
and
it's
you, like,
forgot
those people existed.
Yeah, like, oh. But now it's almost like we live in a culture where church culture where, I, obviously we don't want to flatten or put it all in a vacuum. But for me, my experience was that if I moved or someone left, that it really didn't change my social network. But I also think it's almost now, like, if it does happen, right? It's almost like an apology is owed. And I don't think there is an apology here, because I think, like, I think it's just a reality of having an intimate church with a well-connected body life, that if you decide to unknit yourself and move on, there ought to be an there should be an absence there.
And there is.
I mean, you're not absent from the church universal.
No.
You know what I'm saying? We still share that bond.
So I got a text message shortly after, I don't know, it wasn't this week's sermon, maybe last week's, and it was in regard to like belonging to one another. And the question was, well, does my belonging to one another, does that go universal or does that go local? And I said, the answer is both, but you, like this individual, I told him, I said, but the way that I belong to you and you belong to me changes dramatically if you make your way out of the congregation. Mm-hmm. Like at that point, I'm no longer your elder. Mm-hmm. And so, like, the role that I have shifts dramatically because the way that our view of eldership is that's local church based. Mm. Like, if I jumped over to East Point and sat down in a pew there, I'm not an elder there. Mm-hmm. Like, I have no authority, and I don't expect to have any authority. But the relational aspect of that is there is an assumption, and I think it is an appropriate assumption, and we should function in it, that the Spirit's given that individual to the church. And if there's anybody that I'm going to work to build a relationship with, it's first and foremost going to be those inside of our congregation. And so there's been a couple of times where people have left our congregation and made their way toward another. And when they've done so, I've told them, normally there's a statement like, hey, I want to be friends. Okay, great. Like, I'm not downgrading that. But that's a lower relationship than the one that we just had.
Yeah.
And normally my response to them is, bro, I'll always be your friend. Like, I love you. But that doesn't mean that the relationship's going to stay the exact same, because I was dependent upon you for the care of my soul, and you were dependent upon me. Mm-hmm. And now you're making your way out, and you're saying you still want to be friends. Here's my recommendation to you. You spend all of your time and energy and effort knitting your soul together with those new brothers and sisters in Christ that you're going to dwell with, that you're going to eat the same meal with regularly, right? Because part of this is we're all nurtured by the same thing, right? We come to the same table. We eat the same spiritual food of the ordinary means of grace. Like, you know, Don walking through the table on Sunday, we all sit there and we're all walking out saying par excellence, right? The Lamb, the firstborn. And I don't have that in common with a brother who's down the road. I also am not going to be as dependent upon them for the needs of my own soul. And the problem is because, and I think this is kind of a tell, the reason we think the relationship can continue as it was is because you didn't understand it. You didn't understand it. Because if you understand it appropriately, you know that it can't remain the same.
Yeah, I think they understand it. But it's like being, it's being like logically unfair. You know what I'm saying? It's like expecting something because you wish it, but you know it's not going to be a reality. It's like saying things to people. I'm not saying people are being ungenuine, but I don't think it's a true assessment of reality, but they know reality. You know what I'm saying? It's like when I move out of my parents' house.
Are you saying it's somewhat of a suppression?
Yes. It's like, I think we all are on the same page that we know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
We're just trying to pacify reality that it's not, you know, and lessen. I think what it is an attempt to lessen the pain.
Yeah. And it's like, bro, you just ripped off an arm.
Right.
Yeah.
Just be prepared to feel like you just ripped off an arm.
And it's hurt.
But if you don't feel like you just ripped off an arm when you left a church, then there's a problem.
He didn't even kill it. He missed.
There's a fly that's going around Don's head right now, and this is...
I took a shower before I came here. I don't know what it's doing.
Nobody believes you.
All right. You said, and I quote, we are called to live this out in a local expression.
Oh, yeah.
What is this?
Oh, this is Romans 12. And that means that there is the high calls of the Christian life. So if I was thinking about my introduction for this coming week, And the heading in the ESV is like marks of the true Christian. And while I appreciate that, I think it should probably be extended of marks of the true Christian in the context of the local church. And I would
it's
make
too long.
Yeah, I would make two headings there, that the local church and then secondly in the world. Blake and I walked through this a while back, but the way in which we conduct ourselves and the implications of Romans 1 through 11 is indicated by what we read in Romans 12, 1 through the end of the chapter, really. And so it's marks of the Christian inside the context of the local church. Let love be genuine. Abhor what is evil. Love what is good. Like those, that type of fidelity and obedience is expressed first and foremost inside the Christian community. You can't do a ton of the things mentioned there apart from the local church.
Is it just me, or when you meet somebody and they say, "I go to church at such and such," that I think immediately you reach a common ground, universally speaking, right? But it's one that still has to be assessed.
Yeah.
And you spend a lot of time like eyeballing the individual to be like what is it that you really believe?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You're like looking up their church website.
Yeah.
See what the stare in the face
yeah.
is.
Because yeah. I think that shows how, I hate to use the word superficial, like that context is. Like,
yeah.
Yes, we may share something universally, but what I long to understand and know about you will truly only be discovered in an intimate local
yeah.
setting, whether
yeah.
I discover that on one-on-one time or
yeah.
whether we share it in a local body.
But there's an understanding that if you're a part of the same body, there's an assumption that I have a more like faith and practice with this individual, and you start at a different place.
Yeah.
And you're pushed together. You're pushed together.
No doubt.
All right. So we all have to recognize that we can't flatten all the relationships, right?
Of course.
In the local expression.
Yeah.
You know, in my mind, biblically speaking, it seems the longing of glorification would have us long for the depth and intimacy of interpersonal, imposed intimacy upon all relationships in that context.
That there's
right?
an equality of level.
Yeah. Like, I think that's what I
yeah.
ultimately long for. But I think like the same thing in longing for that and glorification, I then realize, you know, it's like I realize the truth of the present sanctification, right, means that these relationships, even in the local context, are in differing stages of growth and intimacy
yes.
and depth.
Yes.
And I said, like, you know, you said it, this is what you said from the pulpit. It says, you said that many who were here locally to begin with aren't here anymore,
yeah.
and many are brand new, and the fact is that we all recognize that this will be in a constant state of flux until Jesus returns,
yeah.
right? I mean, that there will be comings and goings,
yeah.
and so it just made me think about, like, you know, when someone joins the church, you know, what is a biblical expectation? Because I'll be honest, like, even in the whole thing with Patty and the photo booth,
yeah,
and the photo album,
photo booth.
You know, why is that?
We're going to put a photo booth back there.
Yeah,
we're just going to rip the
we
nursery
have a lot
out
of room
there. Yeah, 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 yeah.
But you know, why is that? Like, why is that? And I think, like,
why is
that a need?
And because it's like, it is a need. Because
it
people,
is a
yeah.
need. Because I honestly don't know everyone.
Yeah.
here,
yeah.
and everyone doesn't know me.
Yeah,
so we're all looking for.
Well, and that's actually probably not so much define knowledge though, but that's probably not so much true. Most people know who you are, Don.
Yeah, certainly.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. I mean, yeah.
But I'm saying,
yeah,
no.
Yeah,
you know
absolutely.
What I'm saying? Like that when I led up to be like the glorification of
yeah.
being there and the intimacy and depth of interpersonal relationships
yeah.
being made full.
Yeah.
And here it's like we have to work and labor and realize that all of these relationships are at different points of growth. And I do
yeah.
think there's a level of intentionality, but there's also a level of limited commodity.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I just don't, you know what I'm saying?
We
don't all have the collective time. And so I think therein lies you let love rule. You know what I'm saying? Because
I got a sermon coming.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay. So on this, though, because this conversation I had yesterday, same thing. One of the things that I think I erred on early was my whole goal was to make it a family instantly.
Mm.
Mm.
it's just not real.
Yeah.
It's just not real. And so like I was trying to do all the time, you know, me scheming, is I'm like, y'all all be in the same room together and that'll make it happen. It doesn't.
Right.
It doesn't make it happen. We're in the same room every single week, you know, and in the midst of that, it does not mean that all of a sudden, by almost osmosis, you will instantly become best friends, right? But what I have noticed is there should be a desire for depth and a patience in breadth. Mm. Like, you should desire to know people deeply, mm-hmm. right? Not, hey man, how's your job? And mm-hmm. that's the depth. Like, hey, like really knowing an individual, and there should be a willingness to pursue that across the board. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't mean that the Lord's going to give you opportunity to pursue that with every single individual in the congregation overnight, mm-hmm. right? So like in a congregation of 30, that's really easy. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, over the period of a year, you can build those relationships. Well, in a congregation of 150, that becomes much more difficult, mm-hmm. and you have to be willing.
Especially with a congregation of 150, which is not, it's not stagnant, it's in flux.
It is.
You
it
know
is.
What I'm saying?
It's moving.
It's moving. It's a living yeah. body.
And so What I've encouraged people who come in and they're saying, hey, how do I plug in? I normally tell them, grab somebody, mm-hmm. right? It may be the person that, birds of a feather, right? It may be somebody that you're naturally inclined to know. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, grab them and build the relationship, but have an expectation and have an intentionality about grabbing a person next to them as well. Are you pausing
me? So this leads to my next question.
Okay.
What should our daily lives look like in body life?
I think even then,
when you grab somebody, yeah. right? You're saying like in natural
you
everyday life.
That,
like, what does that mean?
Blake?
I had a coffee. I took a coffee.
He took a coffee
with a dear brother yesterday for the first time. And Sarah always is like, "What are you going to say?" You know, like when the first time I take a coffee with someone, and I'm always normally like, thankfully this brother like answered my question before I even asked it, but I always want to just be like, "How did you get here?" Mm. Like. That open-ended question of like, what has happened to you in your life that brought you to this moment, mm. you know? And like, they can share however much they want. Mm-hmm. And I think that kind of, you know, that's a starting point. Mm-hmm. But then there's like relationships that you have built mm. where it's like, hey, you're at my house. I'm at your house for 2 or 3 hours mm. and we're talking about everything.
They're asking you what's for dinner.
Yeah, from... You know, those light things, just the world we live in, to mm. spiritual matters or things that we've appreciated about the sermons or mm-hmm. That kind of thing. Like, I think there's like a breadth in that of realizing that you're at different spots with people throughout the congregation. And then, you know, like knowing that ultimately you want that depth. That's what our glorified state is. But mm-hmm. like getting there by tons of different means, really, just through mm-hmm. conversation.
So Julie and I are going to Croatia, and I booked our first excursion. And the first excursion is eat with locals. So I'm going to somebody's house that's going to cook a meal, and Julie and I and probably 8 other strangers are going to sit around. And these people do this for like a living. This is
yeah.
part of the
yeah.
tourist host. But it's a husband and wife, and they cook a real
Croatian meal.
Yeah. And it starts at 8. It'll be over at midnight.
Wow, get me out.
Brother, are you going to be okay?
He's I not know, like okay. really? He'll, and so it's the first night that we're
sleep
there.
Sleep in the bus on the way
yeah,
over.
Yeah, yeah. We yeah. won't be staying the full time, but trust me.
Well, guys, it's 8:30.
But it may be stopping quick, because when it hits people, right, immediately, like, are these people, they're not going to kill you, right? Like, that's no. the... Like, that's the
not
that's,
my first thought, but yeah.
I mean, that's the joke,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, are you going to be safe? Is it going to be okay?
Do they have like, drive-out tags?
It's like, yeah. It's like, everything's going to be fine. But it made me stop and think, like, we'll be, in some strange way,
yeah.
with whoever's around that table, yeah. we will be more closer after we leave mm-hmm. than when we got
Absolutely.
There.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yes, indeed.
What is so mysteriously strange and intimate about meal sharing specifically?
Maybe it's God's design.
Yeah, I didn't make it up. You know what I'm saying?
I'm with
Lawson's
you.
Like about ready to eat the mic.
So you've got, all right, where from where are shadows cast?
Okay.
the substance.
They are. So you've got this really incredible shadow, or not, or really substance, sorry, in the new heavens, new earth of a wedding feast. And I think throughout the entirety of redemptive history, you have a proclamation of a centrality of eating together. I mean, it starts in unfortunately, it starts in Genesis 3.
Don't get me on that Exodus now.
And then you see a progression. I mean, you see meal after meal after meal. Every festival is marked by a feast. Like there's just this overwhelming statement of eating together, of feasting together, of rejoicing together. And so I think that God has designed the table to be a place of unique, and I'm not saying any table. Like I'm not saying eating out. I'm really not. Like I'm not against eating out. Yeah, they're opening their home
and they are going to prepare a feast.
Yep. And you're gonna,
a feast that they have advertised will take 4 hours.
Wow.
Yeah. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm not saying it's going to take the full 4 hours, but I'm saying, like, when you think about where we have shifted culturally as a church, as a church culture, and you're trying to reclaim that type of intimacy, what I just explained, like, that's odd for our Christian culture.
It is.
And you know what I'm doing?
What?
I'm paying to go.
Yeah.
Happily.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think what you have at a table, and I think we do this in every area of our life. We limit, and I'm not against limitations. I think there's reason for order, and I think, you know, I'm with you in that. But when you open yourself up to an individual for the sake of getting to know them, you probably should probably be willing to give it 2 hours. Like, I mean, every meeting I have, I block 2 hours out. Sometimes it's an hour and 15 minutes. Sometimes it's two. And sometimes it's three or four. Mm-hmm. And you just have to be willing to give that time because you don't know what people are bringing. The last thing on the planet I want to do is I'm having a moment where I'm getting to know someone more deeply and being able to minister to them and care for them. And the same for me, right? The last thing I want to do is like, got to go. Right. There's got to be a willingness and an openness to your home and I think really life. One of the things that we are, that one member has applauded of us regularly is that our lives are open. And that need, one of the reasons I'm glad that our lives are open is that I think it promotes an openness within the congregation in general. We should be fellowshipping together. And so going back to your original question of what does body life look like, I think, per usual, it's incredibly ordinary, but it's inviting people into the normal rhythms of your life.
Yeah, that's fair. Do you think missional community being in homes is key to body growth, both like numerically and in intimacy?
Yes.
You do?
I think so. Missional community or whatever the form, I think having small groups of people meeting in homes, yes, okay. I believe so.
So here's my follow-up question.
Oh, my goodness.
What's the responsibility of the church to provide incorporated programs versus what's the responsibility of the members to be active organically? Because you see what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, this is a really good question.
Like
I'm
this
glad
missional
we're doing
community,
this
like incorporated, you know, like incorporated.
Yeah.
Like it seems to set forth an incorporated example that you just want it to happen organically.
Oh yeah,
without the incorporation. So my thing is like you could almost shift missional community to the church space if you knew that it was all happening organically in and of itself. You just see what I'm saying? Is that? I mean, am I making sense?
Yeah,
here?
But Blake's loaded.
I would like to believe that it would happen organically. I think it would happen on a smaller scale. Like, I don't think you're gathering 25 people into your house.
No, definitely no. I
but I don't
totally
think that's necessarily helpful.
No, but I'm saying if we didn't have missional community, if it did not exist as a program of our church, I think the things that we do would happen.
I actually do, too.
With 7 to 10 people.
Yeah.
At a time.
At a time.
As
different
as
homes.
Schedule and calendar allowed.
Sure. Yeah. But I think it would happen regularly.
Freely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, the whole goal, I mean, I've said this a number of times to individuals. I'm glad to say it publicly. The whole design of Mercy Hill was simple, but not lazy, right? Like simple in its intentions and design, meaning the hope of the church is to focus our energy and time around Lord's Day worship, because that's paramount. Mm-hmm. Like if one thing goes, that doesn't go. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Like if we do nothing else, like if everything else burns to the ground and we have Lord's Day worship and the normal outworking of the saints inside of each other's lives, that's enough. Mm-hmm. That's the early church had.
That's all we're doing this summer.
Right. And so, but what's not appropriate, right, is that the saints are not dependent upon each other, that they don't love each other, care for one another, reach out to one another. Like that's essential to church. Mm-hmm. But you know, if I had it my way, every single individual in this body would be meeting with someone at least, you know, once every 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. I think that that's appropriate, but the conversations and the fellowship must be genuine, meaning that it's not around, you know, niche hobbies. It's around the substance of Christ, the gospel, dependence upon the Spirit for life and godliness. Like, that's what has to be the centerpiece. And I will say this, you know, there's a number of those things actually happening, and they're happening in houses, they're happening, you know, they just happen.
But I think when I hear you say that, I immediately that visual of 7 to 10 members sitting around a table sharing a meal as an expression of hospitality of one to another.
Yeah.
And the centerpiece being all sorts of eclectic conversation.
Yeah.
But yet rooted in, I want to know you deeper, right?
Yeah,
I want to know you deeper and I want to celebrate. You know what I'm saying? So I think this, like, when you say not friendship, around niche hobbies or,
yeah,
you know, fleeting, yeah, enjoyments, like sometimes, sometimes a meal can be just that in a sense. Like, I want to express to you some dish that I, yeah, love how to do.
Absolutely.
And we're going to celebrate together. And because of that, we will, you know, say we will fellowship on truth, and there will be depth of conversation. I guess what I'm trying to get at is it doesn't have to be all the time, every 2 weeks, showing up at the coffee shop with your Bible, having conversation with another across the table officially,
yeah,
in a corporate sense. Sometimes it can just be, you know what I'm saying, that, yeah, meal where the Bibles are there,
yeah,
but they're on our tongues and our minds and our hands, you know, in our, yeah, hands. In a
and
sense.
They're not, and they're like, so early on when I was doing discipleship with people, I had a set plan. Here's the plan. Here's what I'm doing, right? What I've taken to now is the, and everybody jokes with me about my question, but it's, we'll talk about whatever it may be. And then the question is, how's your soul? And, yeah, I don't have to ask another question. The ball, yeah, will roll. And that's the type of relationship that you have when you've made it past the formality.
But I think that's probably very common for you, but probably a rarity.
No, I know that.
You know what, yeah, I'm saying? Yeah, yeah. For people in
but
the
I'm saying
body.
that is the goal.
Certainly.
Yeah. The goal is to be able to sit down and to not have to deal with,
but you know, I can build, so as a banker, I can build a financial statement without ever handing you the paper.
Yeah.
So I think that's ultimately when we're checking in on each other as believers,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
you,
yeah,
want to know the information, and, yeah, it's okay if you don't ask it in that way. You know what,
yeah,
I'm saying? Like,
yeah, yeah,
where,
yeah,
it's just genuinely, how are you?
Yeah.
How is that? You know what I'm saying? And where, yeah, just and people seem to share about themselves.
Yeah.
And I think there's a point at which you know someone and you say, you're off.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like,
oh, 100%.
Are you okay? Mm-hmm. You know, like, I think, mm-hmm, that sometimes is more powerful than how's your soul. It's like,
so my buddy,
you're not
said,
who you used to be. What's going on?
Yeah. Who does not go to church here. They've been looking for another church and have been attending someplace else 9 months and just got a phone call. We've been missing you. You know what I'm saying? Like, if I don't see
Wait,
people
9 months
here,
from the church they hadn't been at?
Yeah, yeah.
Sheesh.
Wow.
I think that's pretty common, though.
He was a member there?
Yeah, still
oh,
is.
Oh, that's nutty.
Still
probably.
Is. I think that's really common.
Sadly, yes.
But that's the
waiting
whole,
on staff, yeah, yeah, to reach out to you.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm saying that's not necessarily 100% the staff's responsibility.
No.
And I'm air quoting staff.
Yeah.
That's the body's responsibility.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? If somebody's absent, I can name some people that were absent in the fish fry, and it ain't like I'm making a list and checking it twice,
yeah,
type,
right,
of deal. I just,
right,
was like,
missed
where
you.
My peeps at?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly,
like,
yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, were you about to say sorry?
I forgot.
Well, one of the things that we have done, I think, a disservice to is the body in general, because we haven't informed them that they have responsibilities, right? So all the responsibilities, and I think this is largely due to kind of a concept of professionalism that you know, the elders or the deacons are employees and everybody else out there is a benefactor, they're a consumer. But the reality is, and while I would never say I wouldn't call it an office, but I think we can say safely there are three groups of people at a local church. There's the congregation, of which every single individual is included, elders, deacons included. There's deacons that are set aside for the physical needs of the body, and there's elders who are given to primarily caring for the spiritual needs of the body. And, you know, we're all included in that, but there are roles and responsibilities of the membership of a church. And we've downgraded that. Like, well, I really think this sermon is an assault
on
the body.
Each member has a function.
Yeah, you function here. Like, you have a purpose.
Bring yourself.
Yeah, and show up. And I don't know. I really can't remember much of what I said on Sunday. But
you said a couple good things.
But if I'm being, you know, I think I may have even used the word fringe.
You did.
And
you said something about, like, shoulder in, press in, in the middle, in the middle of
force
it.
Force yourself in the middle.
Yeah.
And you know, there's a responsibility and a willingness to say, hey, come be a part of us. But if you're a part of the church and you've removed yourself, you're probably not exercising, I'm going to say, God's commands on you to be a part of the body. Now, if we're pushing you out and saying, we don't want you here, then that's on us. But I see that very rarely. And I'm not even saying just in the life of Mercy Hill. I'm saying in general, I think that's pretty rare inside of a local body of sit down, be quiet, you know, nickels and noses kind of thing. We're what?
Budgets and butts.
Oh, no.
Yay, say it.
But anyway, I mean, you know, going back to discipleship and going back to normative fellowship, Deuteronomy comes to mind, right? That it's that the Bible is on the frontlets between their eyes, right? And you just, you know, you think about the normal everyday life. I would say that the majority of us probably have memories of a brother or sister in the Lord who has, not in the midst of, like, hey, we're sitting down. I'll say this. The most formative moments of my life have not been in the midst of a programmed Bible study.
Yeah.
Yep.
They've been when a dear brother, I had one today, a pastor who I know.
Listen,
I,
there's never not going to be value in a programmed Bible study.
Of course not. Yeah, we believe in them.
We're not saying that.
Yeah, nobody's tearing it down. Yeah,
no, but I'm saying the normal rhythms of life that have the Bible on the frontlets of your head, and they're in your hand, they're in your heart, and those working themselves out in the normative everyday life of the Christian, that's I'm convinced the way that God has designed true discipleship and even evangelism to take place, right? And so, man, yeah, sit down with your Bible. Sit down and walk somebody through John or Romans or 1 Corinthians or Exodus or whatever it may be.
Yeah, you said if your gift is prophecy, sit down and do it. Express the gift. If your gift
do
is
it.
Teaching,
yeah.
Teach, see, share.
Yeah. Yeah, and do that. But also, there's a danger, and I tell people this in regard to family worship. There's a danger even when you say, we're going to do family worship. Well, if the only time you speak of Christ is in the midst of family worship in your home, you're not doing it right, right? This is life. Like if you know, it's like, I've had my prayer time today. Well, if you're not, you know, throwing an arrow to heaven in the midst of, like...
Yeah, isn't it interesting the correlation between the difficulties of this reality in the individual, and then how it carries itself forward into the body corporately.
Explain.
Meaning, like, you're saying there's, like, there's just natural times of sitting with your Bible and studying it, and then not having it all be corporate, and then having it just be naturally the ebbs and flows and the rhythms of your life. And I think, like, those things are a great challenge for us individually.
Yeah.
And those things are a great challenge when we get together.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there, you know, it's kind of almost like a, I don't know, the picture album. I wish everybody knew everybody's name.
100%.
But that's going to take time.
It's going to take a picture album, probably.
Yeah, and it's going to take some effort both corporately,
yep,
right, and both individually. and collectively together as a group to do this, not only on Sundays to learn of each other, yeah, but also throughout the week. Yeah. You know, that's kind of where I'm at.
And to maybe, I think there's a question of, well, how do I as an individual get to the place where the ebbs and flows of life are doing that? Mm-hmm. A dear friend calls those, he always called them rhythms of grace. And it's like the normative flow of life and, you know, just walking through that normative flow of life with the Bible in your mind, with a prayer and a song of joy in your mouth. Mm. And really this is rooted in just dependence upon Christ and the gospel. Mm. If you are, as an individual, depending upon the gospel, if you're depending upon Jesus and delighting in him, like, I don't know a single person who rejoices in something regularly without ever having a conversation about it. Mm. It's normative. Like, this is how we function as human beings. This is in our DNA. Mm. What we rejoice in, we discuss. Mm. And so if you're sitting down and you're having a conversation with a brother or sister in the Lord, and the gospel, you know, scripture, whatever it may be, never comes to the forefront. Like, it never shows up. I'm not invalidating the relationship that you might have developed in that time, but, you know, that may be a moment where I check myself. Mm-hmm. You know, why is it in the midst of that whole conversation, not a verse flowed from my mouth, or, you know, something prompting me to worship Christ or pray or anything like that didn't happen, right? And so
I would add, do you find yourselves in the early stages of relationship building desiring for those things to take place?
That's fair.
I think you're in a good place there.
Yeah.
And I think they will naturally, yeah, if you keep laboring prayerfully, yeah, in that direction,
yeah,
I think those gospel moments, mm-hmm, collectively will present themselves, yeah, to have true community, yeah, with.
And on that, the only fear that I have in that is the same fear that I have with relational evangelism.
Certainly.
Don't do that thing where you're like, man, I'm really looking forward to talking about the Bible, and then you just never bring it up, and then, mm-hmm, you're 7 years in a relationship and you're still just like, your relationship's built on video games or baseball or sewing, or I don't know anybody whose relationship's built on sewing.
Sounds amazing.
Yeah, I mean...
Bless them.
They gather together and they fix buttons.
Amen.
All right. I'm all out of questions. I don't have anything else. Is there anything that you're going to hang up the phone, Lawson, and go, oh, I should have said?
I don't know.
I just want to ask you that.
I'll say this.
He's never finished.
Never.
I'll say this.
Schedule a meeting for 2 hours.
The last three sermons for me, I have... from the birth of Mercy Hill, you know, along with core team and, you know, various others. But I mean, there is a very real sense where Mercy Hill somewhat originated, you know, in, you know, my desire and what the Lord had kind of, you know, put on me. It's molded, it's been changed by various people. But the one thing that's been a constant is I'm convinced that the church is a family. Mm. And I'm also convinced that it's beautiful. And one thing that I have hoped and I have tried, and you know, Lord help me, I want people to view the church as beautiful. And I think that if you arrive there and you see beauty on the horizon, if you see that this is not just an organization, this is not just a way stop for me, but this is the family that God's given me for at least a period of time, then there is a unique investment. There's a unique suffering amidst. There's a, mm-hmm, unique rejoicing in the midst of. And there's a unique labor that you'll put forth for beauty. Mm-hmm. And as a general rule, mankind pursues beauty. Mm-hmm. And I assure you that nothing that you're going to come across is going to be more beautiful than the bride of Christ at the end of the age. Mm. And I think there should be a prompting in us of labor and care and delight in the body. And so the one thing that I wish I could get across, if I could articulate kind of, if I were to sum it all up in the last 3 weeks, it's like, see the bride as beautiful and long to be a part of her. Mm. And so, yeah.
All right. So in conclusion, I have a Bible verse. It's Matthew 19:29. Says, and everyone who has left houses or brothers or sisters or father or mother or children or lands for my name's sake will receive 100-fold and will inherit eternal life. So I'd like to thank my fellow elders, Lawson Harlow and Blake McCullough, for the time spent today. Fellas, You may be individually 757 and 400, but together you are 1157. My brothers and my friends, Godspeed.
That's just math, guys.
Open with a secular song on Sunday.
Shut your mouth.
If we did that, what would it be? If I was really...
What's the sermon on this week?
Serious.
Oh.
Let love be genuine.
Mm-hmm.
L is for the way you look.
Different oh, yeah. That different would be the one. Mine different would be... Shout to the heart, and you're too late, baby. You give love a bad name. Yep.
You could do one. You're like a dream come true.
Stop it. This is two. Awful.
I want to be with you. Three.
What's that one?
I'm really trying to think of one.
I mean, people open their sermons to like the Stranger Things intro music.
Yeah, we should do Stranger Things. We should do a Revelation series called Stranger Things.
Is that actually happening somewhere?
Yes, I know. I know where. It was Strange Stories of the Bible.
Amen.
And a whole summer series was using the Stranger Things.
I hate our world. Not, there's like 90%. Sorry, it's not true.
It's an indictment on the people sitting there. I'm like, it's pretty much saying you're all biblically illiterate.
You're all idiots. That's right. You're
idiots.
All idiots.
Because the only way that I can keep you entertained is to throw marshmallows at your face.
Yeah, it's not only, in my opinion, it's not only you're all idiots. It's that I'm so much higher than you that let me condescend as low as I can. I know that you can't maintain attention for longer than 40 minutes unless it's Netflix. So we'll put the emblem up there and you'll be fine.
Next thing you know, we'll all be laying in beds.
With your little glasses on, chairs. Getting baptized in the metaverse.
Oh my gosh.
Just know that only gets you into metaverse heaven. It ain't real.